we approached a local partner, Fox Rock Properties, and we kind of said, hey, we think that we, you know, if you had a space available for us, we think we could drive footfall to your existing tenant base. We think we could potentially create a pipeline of new tenants. We think we could create investable opportunities for everyone in this gateway city and qualified opportunity zone. And, you know, we really think, you know, if you could help us out, that would be great. And they said, yeah, we're going to help you out. And, you know, so we're like, oh, we didn't expect that to work. What do we do now?
Welcome to Boston Blockchain. I'm Kyle Hedman of China Shop Productions, and today's guest is none other than the co-founder of Cubic Labs, John O'Keefe. In this episode, we discuss the establishment and mission of Cubic Labs in Quincy as John shares some of the initial challenges the startup incubator faced, as well as some of the innovative projects they've helped develop. If you'd want to learn more about John and Cubic Labs, or maybe you want to pitch a startup of your own, then be sure to read the show notes. Now, without any further ado, let's meet John O'Keefe. John, nice to meet you, man. Thanks for inviting us out here to do this project. Been really excited to get back here, if not just to get some more of that clam chowder over at the Fours.
There you go. Well, happy to host you guys here and welcome to Quincy. And,
well, thank you.
Boston Blockchain Week.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself then. Like, how long have you been in Quincy?
Sure. So I've been in Quincy probably 4 or 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we set up Cubic Labs in 2019. And after a quiet year or two of COVID, kind of really got running in the past 2 years. Yeah, and you know, I live in Maine.
You do? I'm
down here a couple of days a week. Yeah.
Okay.
So I try and get the best of both. You know, the good business climate down here and the nice scenery and all that good outdoor stuff up in Maine.
So how did you get involved with Cubic Labs then? How did that happen?
Yeah, so I worked for a number of years in financial services. I ran a nonprofit in the city for inner city kids. Finished, I think, around 2019,
mm-hmm.
late 2018. And I had reached a point where I wanted to do something for myself. And my business partner, Ian, had reached the same point, and we had gotten chatting, and we kind of said, we're going to do something without quite understanding what we were going to do. But one of the things that stuck out to us was, you know, that we felt that the innovation landscape in Boston and Cambridge, while you know, widely successful and has been hugely successful for a number of years, was starting to create some barriers to entry for entrepreneurs between the cost of living, transportation cost, the commute, the overheads, parking, the general cost of living, the scramble for talent. And we just felt that, like, hey, you know, I wonder, you know, how would we address that? And we saw that concurrently, there was a bunch of economic revitalization going on down on the South Shore of mm-hmm. Boston, and particularly around Quincy. On top of that, we knew that there was a very business-friendly climate down here. And we said, hey, I wonder, could we build a home for entrepreneurs that perhaps have done, you know, they're done their boot camps, but they're looking really for a home for a year or two to build and grow companies. You know, we looked at the DNA here, and we, you know, looking at Quincy, I think the first, was one of the first commercial railroads came out of here.
Oh, really?
We knew that locally in the past couple of years, there was one or two big companies came out of here, IntelliCare and Dive Technologies. And, you know, when we looked at that DNA of innovation and we looked at the business-friendly climate, we said, hey, you know, I think we can do something here. We approached a local partner, Fox Rock Properties, and we kind of said, hey, we think that we, you know, if you had a space available for us, we think we could drive footfall to your existing tenant base. We think mm-hmm. we could potentially create a pipeline of new tenants. We think we could create investable opportunities for everyone in this gateway city and qualified opportunity zone. And, you know, we really think, you know, if you could help us out, that would be great. And they said, yeah, we're going to help you out. And, you know, so we're like, oh, we didn't expect that to work. What do we do now? So they were very gracious partners with that in-kind sponsorship. Immediately saw the benefit of, we can take that in-kind sponsorship and we can pass those savings down to entrepreneurs to create a very low-cost environment for them, where they ultimately can spend their money on really things that move the needle. So product development, sales and marketing, so on and so forth, as opposed to the overheads that are typically a drag on growth.
So does that mean that you guys are like basically providing like a home for them? Like they can come use your office spaces and infrastructure?
Yeah, we wanted to essentially create an incubator. And you know, I had mentioned Fox Rock is a very gracious partner and founding partner. There were others, the South Shore Bank, another McLennan, the law firm. And ultimately, I suppose where we have shown an ability to really work well, it's kind of, you know, our ability to work with all these external partners, whether it's private, academic, state, municipal, and really act as a fulcrum for innovation by, you know, pulling together all these disparate entities. Yeah. And whether it's in-kind sponsorship or financial sponsorship or support for the different programs, and really creating an aggregate return better than all the individual parts or efforts of all those disparate groups. So, you know, we created, you know, we got this incubator going. We want to create a home for these startups. And one of the things we didn't want to do is we didn't want to compete with existing accelerators. We saw that there was accelerators in Boston around fintech and govtech. And, you know, that's kind of where our respective skill sets were. And we said, you know, we need to shift away from this real quickly just because we don't want to compete. They do it better. They've been more established. I think we need to focus on emerging technologies because we know some of those folks don't have a home. We ended up doing a blockchain competition sponsored, I believe, by Castline and Ventures, Nutter McLennan, and Algorand, who were a blockchain Massachusetts-based protocol. And we ended up getting, I think, 60 or 70 applicants domestically and internationally. So we were like, oh, okay, like there is a need for this, support us. These entrepreneurs need a space, they need a home. And then we got an offer of private capital to build out a program. Instead of taking that immediately, what we did is we took that offer and we actually approached Massachusetts Technology Collaborative and we said, hey, we would like to apply for a grant to build a first-of-a-kind public-private blockchain R&D facility. You know, if you guys could be kind enough to support us in this, we would match it with private capital and ultimately, you know, create a situation where the ultimate outcomes are technology job growth, which in turn, I guess, leads to all that good stuff to states like the taxable revenue and all the stuff associated with it.
Right.
But also, you know, as Massachusetts, a place to live, you know, do need to be embracing those new industries, and you can never really sit on your laurels.
Especially in tech.
Especially in tech. And, you know, to be fair, at MTC, we went through the application process, we did the different interviews and stuff, and ultimately the grant approval came, which meant now that we had a first-of-a-kind project to do. We ended up starting the project, and, you know, I had kind of said, okay, let's replicate some, maybe do it a little better, but replicate and make better a couple of existing blockchain projects, and we quickly found out that, oh, you know, at that time, there actually wasn't that many real-world blockchain applications, so we kind of went back in a report again and said, well, you know what? We're going to create first-of-a-kind use cases. That's a fairly big claim to make, which gave me a couple of sleepless nights, but we actually did end up doing first-of-a-kind project as a direct result of the grant, and the grant is still ongoing, but we ended up doing one of our member companies, one of the first blockchain-based municipal bonds, the first blockchain-based municipal bond issuance in the country, which was really cool.
Yep.
And, like, you know, personally satisfying to us because we said we were going to do it, but then we went and we did it. And, you know, we got a couple of more coming in terms of a couple of more case studies coming that we're really happy with. But the point being is that we're kind of executing what we said we'd do, which is, of course, personally satisfying and you know, makes you feel good.
And speaking of the Quincy bond release, I should also mention that we actually covered that project with Eric Mason back in April. Put a link to that in the description if people want to check that out, because that was a fascinating interview with those guys.
Yeah, and look, just a quick, you know, description of it. Really, what we're trying to do there is my interest in that project was really around retail participation. So,
yes.
You know, ultimately, you're in a situation where a lot of municipal bonds, while tax exempt, they're typically for institutional investment just because of the cost of the minimums. And our thesis was, hey, you know, if we could potentially use blockchain or distributed ledger technology to bring down operational costs, could we also bring down the minimums accordingly and allow more retail investors to participate in this market? And what that would mean really is, imagine if you could invest in, if you lived in Boston, you could invest in the new Boston Bridge or the local high school or whatever. And what's cool about that is you're allowing people to invest in local projects. You're aligning civic participation with financial upside. And finally, then you're creating a newer market for the municipalities of potential investors, which I think is a cool project. It's a nice case study, so it's a cool one to be involved in.
The thing I like about it, too, is that as a community member, now I can actually go and help support the projects that I want to make sure get funded. Like,
correct.
That just, the freedom of that gives you.
Correct, and make a return. Now, there are some potentially cool things, too, down the line. So your coupon or or the interest payment you get off that investment, could we potentially tokenize that and use it to offset your property taxes? Like, there are a couple of really cool protocols, but we just got past the proof of concept, and we'll probably, I'm not sure, is it with Quincy or with a couple of other municipalities, but what would be really cool now is to do some more issuances, and as the regulatory costs come down,
right?
Because the first time you do anything, there's a lot of extra stuff involved in it. We'll get a clearer view of what the actual costs are. We'll build up the data to show us which way this thing is trending, and really, is it a viable exercise to do on a regular basis?
Have you been getting more people calling, asking about?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of inbound calls, which is interesting. And, we are currently in talks with a number of different entities.
That's awesome. I hope that continues, because that is definitely the direction I want to see financial markets go. I wanted to ask you about the focus that the company is on, Cubic Labs. The focus seems to be on like the blockchain side as opposed to the crypto side.
Yeah. Well, very frankly, a couple of years ago, we looked at crypto as blockchain as an underlying technology that crypto was built on. And we felt fundamentally that it had a lot more utility. We felt that it had a lot more application. The other side of it is that, the crypto space at the time was under quite a bit of attack from the establishment, if you want to call it that. And
They weren't, the spokespeople weren't doing themselves any favors either.
Well, yeah, I mean, in full disclosure, you had a lot of people that became very wealthy with crypto, and I don't think that particular demographic showered themselves in glory either. One way or another, though, we didn't want the baggage. We're interested in building useful case studies for technology that contributes and makes people's lives better or more efficient. And also, frankly, we felt that a lot of the kind of political pushback on some of this stuff was because the industry hadn't created many useful case studies that they could directly point to push back on why this technology was important.
Right.
So that was a great starting point. And finally, then the last thing was, we probably didn't need some of the baggage associated with crypto, particularly when you work with state or federal agencies. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, you just don't need, so like for a number of different reasons, well, fundamentally that we felt blockchain was had a lot more useful applications, and specifically in what I call boring industries.
Like medical records and...
Oh, correct. Medical records, DMV, all that type of stuff. And actually, from a business opportunity perspective, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. One of the reasons why the municipal bond issue was interesting to us is because you're actually changing the underlying technology.
Right.
You're not changing the process. Ultimately, I don't believe you're changing the risk profile.
Didn't seem like it from the research
but
I did.
Not that I'm qualified on the financial side of talk about that, but right. More from the technology side, you're really just offering a better technology. And across the board, utilizing distributed ledger technology in those little more boring spaces, it can be quite a good business model.
Yes.
And there's less of the regulatory headaches as well.
Do you think that crypto and blockchain are always going to be linked together, or can one exist without the other?
Well, I mean, blockchain is the underlying technology, but I also think that over time, the crypto space will evolve into something, or it has to evolve into something that governments are okay with. I mean, I've always felt fundamentally that the real issue that spooks government about crypto is just how do we know what tax you're paying? That's ultimately what they care about.
So I always thought it was about sanctions.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, the man wants his cut.
Yes.
And I don't know, I don't care where you live, there's always some type of man that takes his cut.
Yep, death and taxes.
And I do think there are probably some things, interesting things coming down the pipeline that, like, what was very interesting to me is a lot of particularly younger, let's say in their 20s, people who made money on crypto. I've watched their evolution, because at the very start, they were like, I'd like, I'm very anti-government, this and that. But then over time, as they get older, what you started to see was, geez, it would be great if I could insure this. And they start looking for the traditional services available, that are available to someone else doing something similar with a different asset class. And
right.
So as their risk profile change and their tolerance change, they start looking for things and the other questions, I made some money on crypto. How can I show that on my statement if I'm looking for a down payment for a house?
Uh-huh.
So what I think, and there's a lot more people way more qualified to talk in the crypto space than I am, but what I've just felt philosophically is that what could be a potential useful scenario is that if you have let's say off chain or assets that are hidden, that's okay. but you don't get the protection you would otherwise be entitled to. But like, if you do, then it's just another currency.
Right.
And the other side of the crypto space I've always felt is that like, it's not really a currency if a useful currency if the volatility is crazy. So if a pound of sausage costs you $1 today and $10 tomorrow and whatever asset, you know, that's not a useful currency exchange. And so, I mean, is it a currency or a speculative asset? And they're two very different things.
And it's just still so new, I think. We're starting to see some institutional adoption.
I would argue institutional adoption has been going on for a long time and that some of them have specifically slowed down the... they've been working on this stuff furiously on the back end,
mm-hmm.
while publicly probably slowing down adoption and doing everything they can so they can get up to speed and own the market.
Uh-huh.
Kind of bugs the shit out of me, but that's the way it is.
I'm going back to some of the projects that Cubic Labs is working on then. What are some of the things that you guys have, some of the partners you're working with that have you most excited?
So we have three components to what we do here. We have our event section. We do Boston Blockchain Week every year, which is a bunch of fun. We have our regular incubator, and then we have our R&D program. You know, we have, I think, 10 companies currently in our R&D program at different stages. Our most recent ones are Almond FinTech, Circular Labs.
Circular Labs, I was just researching. They look really neat.
Yeah, so there's a couple of cool ones. I mean, I won't talk about any particular one because I'll do a disservice to the others. But, you know, I mean, we're just looking to work with cool people that have good grasp of the technology and, you know, the bandwidth to take any challenge that comes and pivot accordingly, and probably the financial runway to stick at it for however long it needs to be stuck with to really get the project up and moving.
If there's somebody out there that has a project that they're working on and they wanted to get in touch with you guys to see if there's a chance to form a partnership, how would they go about doing that?
We're still not that fancy an organization, so you'd probably like find my cell number on our website somewhere. But, you know, we have an application page on our website. You know, we have seen a big spike in applications. I think we got 100 last month.
Oh, wow.
And so we are bringing an additional layer of, I won't say professionalism, but an additional layer of programmatic support to the program and looking at our systems, and we're growing accordingly.
And some infrastructure in place to help streamline some of it.
Correct. Yeah. And that'll also help me, you know, stay on top of things because I think we have 4 or 5 employees now and a team of advisors and then a team of wider kind of in-kind supporters that we pull in, whether from a legal perspective or accountancy perspective. And, you know, the members have different needs. So, at the start, they all come to us saying, oh, you know, have you got fundraising for us? Now, I do think there is an element of that the U.S. has probably printed out so much money in the last couple of years that we've got into a zeitgeist of, like, I especially see college students saying, have you got funding for us? And I'm like, oh, why don't you build a product and sell something?
Right.
Like, that's the name of the game, I guess.
You got to do something first before someone will back.
But having kind of worked with groups, you quickly get an understanding of, like, oh, well, are they in a place that they need fundraising and checking, like, well, what's your plan of execution with the funds? And really, you know, doing some due diligence before you even introduce them to someone. We do provide access to capital. We do provide kind of strategic support, legal support to our partners, outsource CFO support, depending on the startup. You know, when a group comes to us through our R&D program, we evaluate them from a technology perspective and a commercial perspective. One of the underlying challenges I found in the space is you kind of need to have two skill sets. So, like, you know, a startup would come to us and saying, well, we're a blockchain company. And I'd be like, well, no, you're not, unless you're a blockchain protocol. Blockchain is just a tool that you can utilize to, you know, make whatever product you have better. But, like, you know, I'd argue sometimes that the product developer is just as important as the blockchain piece or more so. And so we look at that type of stuff. I found it challenging in the space to find guys, for example, one of the reasons why I mentioned we're going to create original case studies is because, to execute on that first municipal case study, I actually set up a consultancy called Blockwise Advisors. And the one of the reasons for that is I found that a lot of the entrepreneurs, or particularly, the developers, the kind of entrepreneur developers, they were creating these products with no specific solution in mind. So they had a general idea of this is what it can do. They really couldn't communicate to the executive level leadership how this product would realistically impact specifically what pain points in your organization. How will this impact your operational efficiencies? How will it impact your bottom line revenues? There was a huge gap there. And one of the reasons is because it's kind of hard to find someone with the two different skill set of understanding this industry from the business perspective, but then also understanding the technology itself. Because I think technology is getting more and more sub-specialized.
Mm-hmm.
When these developers pull their head up for air, they really sometimes can't translate the gap. So like that's kind of what we set up Blockways Advisors to do on that Muni project and a couple other projects we got in the pipeline. So looking at those things, like from a technology perspective, what's their team like? What is their, if we give them a grant for R&D, what happened when that grant is finished? Like, where do they go from there? You know, do they need to hire more people? From a commercial perspective, you know, is the product viable? What type of experience do the people have? What type of financial runway do they have? You could have the best idea in the world, but like if you only got 3 months or 4 months, you know, that can be difficult. And so we look at all that type of stuff and a team of us. And then, you know, at some point in time, you do have to make a decision and you pick your horse and you go with it.
Sounds like it's more than just a like, hey, can you give me some money? And then it's a yes or no. It sounds like it's more like a collaborative development with you and your partners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we give out on the wider scheme of things, some of the grants we give out, like it can be a drop in the ocean compared to what you need to fully build out and develop the product. So it's not just about can you execute in this part of the project. It's like, well, yeah, but after that's done, like where are you going to go from there? And we need to be comfortable that, yeah, this will take you closer to your goal, but then you got it in-house to go and actually execute on it afterwards and get to that in line wherever that may be.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to ask you about then, because you said that Cubic started in 2019, I think. That was like right when COVID hit.
Yeah, that was a disaster. I mean, probably the worst time.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about that. What were some of the challenges you had to go through with that?
Oh, there was no challenges because there was no business. We we had this 14,000 square feet of space and like.
So it was you started before and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah, it was tough. But in a way, I think like, you know, every cloud is a silver lining. But for us, we don't have the pressures other incubators have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that, you know, our sponsors or our biggest sponsor was our in-kind property means that like we don't have any overhead. So
mm-hmm.
on the one hand, it's difficult, like your business idea and you want to get it going, but we didn't have a huge cash burn
right.
while there wasn't a bunch going on. And even now, as I see different ones, you know, going in and out of business, we have a different type of model where we can take maybe a longer term view, because not just from the private sponsor perspective, but in different partnerships we have, like with the local municipality. You know, we're a tax-exempt organization, and really what we're trying to do is create a couple of thousand technology jobs in Massachusetts. And because of the way we're set up, we can sometimes take a longer time frame, which you do need when you're investing in some of these companies, a longer time frame. Because, you know, realistically speaking, a company we set up or support, you know, they potentially may not sell or get acquired or make any meaningful progress for a year or two or three or four.
And, yeah.
And being able to have a longer time horizon and stuff is really helpful to us because we can really plan to be successful without some of the current headwinds that could face us if we didn't have municipal or that private partner support.
Then there's no pressure for you to try to force things ahead of schedule either.
No, there's always pressure for us to kind of execute and do well, but we have a longer time frame with how we should do it, which means it's a different model than some of our partners or some of our, not competitors, but other guys in the space.
Yeah. All right. Last thing then before we close this up. You just climbed Kilimanjaro, right?
I did.
You want to talk to me about that experience?
Yeah, that was really cool. Coming off a busy year, we had just got that issuance done. We just hired someone awesome at Cubic Labs, and as well, his name is Manuel Rinaldi, and he manages our program. And I kind of just, you know, I was able to take 2 weeks off and maybe catch up on some of the fitness side of things and turn my phone off for 2 weeks. So I went to Arusha in Tanzania and climbed Kilimanjaro and locally. Mount Meru as well, and that was...
How long did it take?
Took 5 days, and a wonderful experience culturally and physically, and great sense of accomplishment afterwards, and during it, I was miserable.
I bet, yes.
I feel great afterwards, so I just would encourage everyone. Sometimes we, with the phones and the social media now, and like, it's just busy in a very bad way, and like, it's okay once a year to just unplug and businesses be damned, you know, like, listen, guys, I gotta switch it off for a while. You know, hopefully things will go well. But if they don't, I'm still taking the time because everyone's got to take the time.
You have to, yeah. But that just speaks to how good the team is, because it didn't seem like they missed a beat while you were gone.
No, it didn't seem like they missed me, but
you missed them, right?
No, they're good.
Nah, they missed you. What's the next mountain you're planning on climbing?
I think it's called Aconcagua down in South America.
Okay.
So
is that like in the Andes?
I just started looking at it last week, but like you go from like on summit day, I'm never doing this again, to a week later being like,
oh, right,
you know, maybe I could do something again.
It's one of those things where you feel great after you did it.
Well, and also you need to have, everyone needs to have goals and things they look forward to. Yeah. And some guys are disciplined enough to be like, I go to the gym every day, but like, I got to have something to work towards.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'd be like, oh, why am I doing this?
Just walking 4 miles to nowhere. It's stupid.
Correct. Yep.
Yep. I agree with that. Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you got a really busy schedule. We got the event going on. Yep. It's about to really start kicking up in full gear here. Hopefully we can do something again here in the future.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much.
The cover art for this podcast was custom designed for us by the amazing people at Epic Made. Epic Made is a digital art and animation studio that actually understands the magic behind powerful creative assets for gaming, entertainment, and tech. So visit epicmade.com to get expert creative help for campaigns, commercials, socials, and more. That's epic-made.com. DSpark is the leading user research platform for Web3. Companies can easily get feedback from any type of user, helping them build better products and improve their marketing. If you're interested in giving feedback, get paid USDC to share your opinions and improve Web3. Visit DSpark.io today. That's DESPARK.io. Bola allows you to create, tokenize, and finance invoices and manage all of your on-chain accounts. With TCS Blockchain, they recently went live with their groundbreaking solution that uses blockchain to settle freight invoices 90% cheaper and faster than traditional means. Thank you for helping make this show possible, Bola. Go to bolanetwork.com and tcsblockchain.com to learn more and join the waitlist. Numbers Protocol harnesses blockchain technology to enhance authenticity and traceability of digital content globally, with operational bases in London, LA, Dubai, and Taiwan. Recognized as the best in Web3 at the 2023 SXSW Awards and supported by Google and NVIDIA, Numbers Protocol offers the Capture, an all-in-one suite for content verification, copyright protection, and monetization. This technology has proven pivotal in projects like the archival of the 2020 U.S. presidential election and supports artists and businesses in ensuring the integrity and security of digital media. Jotto is a cutting-edge platform that amplifies the customer voice by making it simple for organizations to gather feedback through video, audio, and text. Using powerful AI, Jotto analyzes this feedback in real time to deliver actionable insights that help organizations understand their audience better. Whether it's governments, businesses, or events, Jotto enables a deeper connection by ensuring every voice is heard and valued. It's an essential tool for anyone looking to turn raw feedback into strategic actions and drive meaningful engagement. So once again, thank you to our sponsors for helping make the show possible, and thank you everybody for listening. The views and opinions expressed on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial, legal, or professional advice. Always conduct your own research and consult with a qualified professional before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and hope you enjoy the insights and expertise shared in today's episode.